ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Hare Krishna. So today we are reading from chapter 12 of Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, text number 2. Kindly respond word for word.
Maya Vishmano Yema Nityayukta Upasate Shraddhaya Parayopetas Teme Yukta Tamamata Shri Bhagavan Uva.
Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, those who fix their minds upon my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be most perfect. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In answer to Arjuna's question, Krishna clearly says that he who concentrates upon his personal form and who worships him with faith and devotion is to be considered most perfect in yoga. For one in such Krishna consciousness, there are no material activities because everything is done for Krishna. A pure devotee is constantly engaged. Sometimes he chants, sometimes he hears or reads books about Krishna, or sometimes he cooks prasadam, or goes to the marketplace to purchase something for Krishna, or sometimes he washes the temple or the dishes. Whatever he does not let a single moment pass without devoting his activities to Krishna. Such action is in full samadhi. Mukam karoti va. Yesterday we saw, or in the previous verse 12.1, we heard Arjun asking the question to Krishna that of the two kinds of transcendentalists, those who are attracted to the personal feature of the Lord and his devotional service, and those who worship the impersonal Brahman, the unmanifested Brahman, who is better? So Arjuna, being a devotee, he is naturally attracted to Krishna's form. And he is satisfied in rendering devotional service. However, since Krishna has revealed his universal form, revealed the impersonal aspect of the of his absolute nature, Arjuna wants to be sure that what he is doing is all right. What he is engaged in is perfect. Arjuna does not want to do something that is not 100% dedicated to Krishna. Arjuna is not asking this question because he wants to be a great devotee. That is not the impetus or his motivation for asking this question. That of the impersonalists and the personalists, who is greatest? And supposing Krishna says personalists, Arjuna goes, Jai, and I am the greatest. Yes, you know about this. This was very famously used by one sports personality. I am the greatest. You've heard of him? Cassius Clay, who later on called himself Cassius X. And then he became famous in the world of professional boxing. 1964 or 67, I guess. And then he became Muhammad Ali. He became known as Muhammad Ali, the Great. So after winning a fight, generally he would... Have you seen a boxing ring ever? A professional boxing ring. It's like a stage and there's a fence around. A rubber fence within which there are two boxers. They have to fight each other. So he would, after a fight, and obviously he had a very good record. I guess he lost one fight and maybe one or two in his career. And he won most of his fights, and major percentage of his fights were all knockouts. Knockouts means the person was anya logo ki sukham yatra. The person was defeated, maybe unconscious on the mat, his opponent. So after that, he was so much charged. He would run around the ring and then go to one particular corner, stand on the lowest rung of the fence, the boxing ring fence, and he would lean on the upper two rungs, lean out into the crowd, and with his two hands up, this is a famous photo, well known, great Ali, and he would shout, "I am the greatest. Yeah, I am the greatest." Like that. So did Arjuna want that? Krishna, I'm waiting. And as soon as Krishna, there are two buttons in front of Krishna. Choice is yours, Krishna. Which one do you choose? Who is the greatest? Personalist or impersonalist? And Arjuna is ready with all his fanfare. Is he with all his cheering squad? That as soon as Krishna presses the button of, you know, which states that devotee is the greatest, Arjuna starts dancing. I knew it. I am the greatest. No. Arjuna naturally has an inclination to dedicate whatever is the best that he can possess in service of Krishna. So if Krishna would have said that impersonal worship would have been the best, then Arjuna would have felt, oh, till now I did not properly serve Krishna, and would have taken up the other path. So he wanted to be secure in the knowledge or in the understanding that what he was doing was the best for Krishna. Because Krishna is his supreme Lord. Devotional service is naturally very attractive compared to impersonal meditation. Once there was a colony of bats. Bats generally hang upside down, don't they? They hang from their feet. And that is how they take rest. Upside down. Hanging by their feet. So one day, or one night, whichever night they fly out. So one day, the bats noticed that there was on the floor a bat upright, not moving. So they asked, "What happened to this? Why is this bat upright? Why isn't he hanging upside down?" So one of the bats said, "He's practicing meditation. Therefore, he's sitting upright." No one could understand why he's doing that. Why doesn't he hang upside down? Natural position. So anyways, actually the bat was dead and stiff. Naturally, bats never stay upright. It's not natural for them. It's very uncomfortable for them. But it appeared that as if he was sitting in a yogic posture, you know, very stiff and meditating. So it is very natural to be attracted to devotional service as compared to impersonal meditation. I'm sorry. But Arjuna wants to establish this fact, especially through the mouth of Krishna. So he asks Krishna, please Krishna, tell me, which is the highest? What I am doing to serve you, is it perfect? Is it all right? Another need for Arjuna to ask this question is his own security, because Arjuna realizes, as does any transcendentalist, that material life is temporary. Death is going to come very soon. And with death comes a complete change of body and generally loss of memory and a new life altogether. He knows that. So now he has got a chance to practice devotional service. So he wants to be sure that now that since he's practicing devotional service, this will help him even in his future life to continue on practicing devotional service. Not that it would change. In other words, he wants to be secure in the knowledge that devotional service is eternal. He wants to be convinced with that security that this process will go on eternally, this lifetime and future too. Now, if Krishna would establish that devotional service is eternal, then devotional service is the highest, the worship of the personalist is the highest, then automatically Arjuna is secure in this knowledge. So for these reasons, Arjuna has asked Krishna this question. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Lalita Vishakha Devi ki jai. Gopalnath ji ki jai. Shri Shri Nitai Gaurchandra ki jai. So he has asked this question. And Srila Prabhupada, yesterday we said that he hinted that how devotional service is more practical and definitely better than the impersonal path. Now let us see what Krishna says. We have already read the translation. Shri Bhagavan Uvach, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is saying. The word Bhagavan means someone who possesses six types of opulences in full. Now, in the entire world, if we were to go about collecting opulences as treasures, then we won't find any treasure beyond these six opulences. This is a complete list of opulences to be found. And one of the opulences is renunciation, vairagya. So, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha means he is the king of all renunciates. So, Arjuna is asking the question, the path of renunciation of work which is adopted by the impersonalist, is that greater? Or the path of working in loving service unto Krishna, is that the greatest? Personal worship or impersonal worship? Now Krishna, as we mentioned, because he is addressed as Bhagavan, which means he is the topmost of all renunciates, obviously he knows what the path of renunciation will give. What is the fruit of the path of renunciation? Or what is the fruit of the path of impersonal meditation? Because he is full in that opulence too. So obviously he is not going to give a biased answer. He is going to give a good answer. He is going to give a complete and perfect answer. The impersonalist cannot argue that, oh, Krishna does not know anything about renunciation. He never meditated in his life or something like that. No, by the word Bhagavan, it is already implicated. Krishna has already been implicated as topmost renunciate. Right? So therefore, his answer will be unbiased and neutral. One who has completely engaged his consciousness in me, in love and devotion, that person is the topmost, Krishna says. Avesha mano ye mam. Whose mind has completely entered within the realm of Krishna's devotional service. And Prabhupada in the purport says, the processes by which one can do that, by cooking, by cleaning, by hearing, by chanting, by speaking about Krishna, by going to the market to buy items for Krishna. The idea being to not let a single moment pass without some activity rendered in Krishna's service. In the nectar of devotion, there are 9 specific qualities of a perfectly pure living entity. And one of them is avyartha kalatvam. Avyartha kalatvam means not a moment is wasted in something other than Krishna consciousness. Every moment is used to serve Krishna. So here, what are the ways by which one can use every single moment? For the impersonalist, their only option is meditate, meditate, and meditate. Now they can choose between these 3 options. Meditate, meditate, and meditate. Whichever they like. You know. But for the devotees, there is going to the marketplace, visiting others to tell them about Krishna, decorating the temple for festivals, cleaning the temple hall. There are so many ways that one can be engaged, such that not a single moment is lost without Krishna consciousness. So this is the glory of the process of personal worship. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 4th canto, there is this very famous story. You've heard of the Sanat Kumars, haven't you? The 4 Kumaras, led by Sanat Kumar, Sanat Kumar Adi, Sanat, Sanatan, Sanandan, Sanak. 4 brothers. The first mind-born children of Lord Brahma. They had total, the inheritance of the entire property of Brahma was theirs. At the age of 5, they renounced it. When they were born, because they were born of the mind of Brahma, they were already 4 or 5 years old. They were developed so much. But spiritually and mentally, they were so developed that Brahmaji said, "All right, this entire creation is yours. Which planet do you want to rule?" And they said, "None. We want to practice meditation." They left. They went off to the forest to practice meditation. What could Brahmaji do? Because he himself, to understand this material world, had practiced meditation. So when his sons took up the path, although he did not want them to do so, father is naturally attracted to his children, isn't it? So he didn't want his children to take up to the path of renunciation so fast. But what could he do? The sons were determined, so they went to the forest to practice renunciation. They became so renounced. They became so detached from the material world that they used all of their prowess to stay as young children such that they will never be challenged by any change in their life. Because change means distraction. When the body changes, when the mental status changes, there's always distraction. There's something. Change means there's going to be action and reaction. We change and the material world is going to give a reaction to that change. As soon as there's a reaction, we'll respond to it, and thus starts the cycle of karma. So they decided, we will stay as young children itself, no change at all. And our consciousness will keep it totally detached from all material opulences. And thus, mentally and physically, we'll be totally unchanged. Thus, there was no action and reaction for them. They were sthita pragya, very sober and completely unagitated. Till one day, they had read the scriptures, they had discussed the scriptures amongst themselves. After the 4 Kumaras, Brahmaji produced Narad Muni, then he produced Shankar, then he produced the Prajapatis. So slowly, a whole team of very knowledgeable and devotional personalities were manifested in the creation. And they would meet on and off and have discussions. And within such a sabha, within such a congregation, the four Kumaras would also be there. So they are a herd of Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha. And they knew that Lord Vishnu was beyond the material realm. They knew he was a transcendental personality. However, somehow or the other, because they had no direct reciprocation with Lord Vishnu as of yet, their attraction to the impersonal aspect was more strong than attraction to Lord Vishnu. So although they had heard of Lord Vishnu, they would always remain only meditating on the impersonal aspect of the Absolute Truth. Till one day, one of them suggested, let's go and visit this transcendental personality, Vishnu. So they went to Lord Vishnu's home in Shvetadeep. And there they found two guards, Jay and Vijay, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, who stopped them and said, only mature people can enter inside. So the four Kumaras asked them, don't you think we are mature enough? They said, from your size, it doesn't appear to be so. Children generally are not very mature. So they said, from your appearance, it doesn't appear to be so. They said, how can you be the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha? Because those who are the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha should be very mature. But you are immature. You are judging someone. That is the first disqualification of being in Vaikuntha. You cannot judge anyone. And secondly, your judgment is faulty. Because you are judging only by external appearance. Therefore, we curse you. Now, curses to us is something really very horrible. Because all we have heard of curses is, I curse you to become a witch. You know, those of us who have been brought up in a convent school, we have heard of many curses. And those of us who have heard from our grandmother's stories, we have heard of curses of the Indian epics. So curses are horrible because a very beautiful person becomes cursed to become an ugly person. A person can be cursed to become a snake or a tree. It's very horrible. At least to our perception, our mind. However, when great personalities curse, that curse is out of a feeling of compassion. So you are the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha, but you are making this terrible mistake of judging and judging wrongly. Therefore, we curse you that you go and realize how one should not be judgmental in this material world by being judged yourself. So you become demons and people will judge you. You know, the doorkeepers of Vaikuntha are pristine, pure followers of the Lord. They became cursed to become asuras or demons. So everyone is going to now, you know, point fingers at them and say, these are the demons. These are demons. Everyone is going to judge them. So now you go and experience that. And thus they cursed them to become demons or asuras for three lifetimes. Meanwhile, news reached Lord Vishnu that there is some debate going on. And yeah, some friction. There is some kalaha. There is some kuntha in Vaikuntha at the doorstep. Some agitation. So Lord Vishnu immediately came. The reason being, both of them were very dear to Lord Vishnu. And he wanted also to specially bless the four Kumaras. When Lord Vishnu entered the arena where this drama was taking place, this friction was taking place, something very interesting happened. Would you like to hear? Or do you know? Some of you must be knowing. Do you know what happened when Lord Vishnu entered the arena? When he reached the first gate of his kingdom of Vaikuntha, the doorway to Vaikuntha, the gateway to Vaikuntha. Does anyone here know what happened? All right. So this will be nice for me to repeat. Lord Vishnu saw Jay and Vijay, his two devotees who were the gatekeepers of Vaikuntha, and the four Kumaras. And the four Kumaras were a little angry or a little agitated. And Lord Vishnu, he did something mystical. He knew these people were, these four were transcendentalists, and they were big time meditators. Whatever they received in the form of meditation, they would absorb it completely. So before Lord Vishnu announced his presence to them, he did something that changed the lives of the four Kumaras completely, forever. And this beautiful verse is narrated by Shukdev Maharaj. Tasya Ravinda Nayanasya Pada Ravinda Kinjal Kamishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayo Antargata Svivarena Chakaratesham Sankshobhamakshara Josham Api Chitta Tanvo Tasyaravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda Kinjal Kamishra Tulasi Makaranda Vayu Makaranda. They smelt the fragrance. Actually, the air, Makaranda Vayu, the air carried the fragrance of the tulsi leaves that had been mixed up with sandalwood paste and applied to the feet of Lord Vishnu. Tulsi leaves are always applied with sandalwood paste on the feet of Lord Vishnu. So Lord Vishnu, when he had come, the Vayu, the air of Vaikuntha, inspired by the Lord, carried the fragrance of these tulsi leaves mixed up with the sandalwood paste, the chandan. Where? Antargata swavivarena. It carried it swavivarena to the nostrils of the four Kumaras. Now there were six personalities here, other than Lord Vishnu, who was the seventh. But by the Lord's arrangement, the fragrance of the tulsi leaves. How many of us have smelled the fragrance of tulsi leaves mixed with sandalwood paste? Yes? How is the fragrance compared to a rose flower fragrance or a lotus flower fragrance? For us, there's a difference, isn't it? Now let us see what happens when Lord Vishnu personally orchestrates something. So by the Lord's arrangement, the fragrance of this tulsi leaves mixed with sandalwood is entering the nostrils of the four Kumaras. And because the four Kumaras are very good at meditation, whatever that they receive in the form of impulses, they meditate on it thoroughly. So antargata, they took it completely within their consciousness. They took in this fragrance totally within their consciousness. And chakara tesham, what happened to them? They started becoming a little sankshobham, agitated. Changes started happening in them. They had spent thousands of years controlling the process of change. Externally and internally, they had taken a lot of efforts as impersonalist meditators not to allow any change to come within their consciousness or within their body. But this time, chitta tanvo api. Chitta means within their consciousness, tanva means within their body, tanu. By the mercy of Lord Vishnu, changes started taking place within the body and the mind and the consciousness of the four Kumars. And what was the change? They noticed the Lord for the first time. And how did they notice the Lord for the first time? Tasya Aravinda Nayanasya Padaravind. They saw the Lord as blooming lotuses. They saw his lotus face, his eyes, and they were like beautiful lotuses, blooming lotuses. They saw his lotus, his feet, and all that came to their mind was lotus. Lotus, the idea of lotus, the concept of a lotus within the tradition of Sanatana Dharma is that which is very beautiful, that which can give us, fulfill all of our desires. Therefore, a lotus is not only carried by the Supreme Lord Himself, but it is also carried by the Goddess of Fortune. She also carries a lotus in her hand because she can bestow all opulences and all auspiciousness. Even the Goddess of Learning, she stands on a lotus. So lotus signifies auspiciousness. It signifies beauty. It signifies perfection. What to speak of the fragrance of a lotus? What to speak of the delicate, beautiful, the delicate beauty of its petals and its color? Their mind and body was changed. And what was the change? They started noticing the personality of the Lord. And the next verse describes what they noticed. They have been described here as Sankshobham Akshara Jusham. Jusham means someone who is completely enjoying, tasting, relishing. What were these four Kumaras relishing? Akshara. They were relishing the taste or the happiness of impersonalism, impersonal aspect. There was no agitation, there was no unhappiness ever in their life. All they were experiencing was total bliss of being in the mode of goodness, untouched by passion or ignorance. So they were enjoying that mode of existence, Akshara Jusham. And suddenly a change wing comes about. And what is that change? They notice that the face of the Lord is just like the whirl or the inner portion of a blue blooming lotus. Generally, pink lotuses bloom during the day. They are supposed to be, the sun is supposed to be their friend. But there is another category of lotus that blooms only at night when the moon comes up. These are blue lotuses. They bloom at night. And they are very beautiful because it's night time, the full moon is there, it's soothing rays, which itself is so charming and creates a mystical environment. And then there is the rays of the sun slithering off the lake, the waters of the lake. And there is this blue lotus which is reflecting the white moonshine. Just imagine this beautiful scene that is there. Therefore, a blue lotus is very beautiful. And when it is fully blooming, the inside whirl with its stamens, it strikes the, as if the rays, when they strike it, it is like just like lightning. So his beautiful face, they observe to be just like the insides of a blue lotus. And then they observed his beautiful smile. And they felt his smile was just like a beautiful blooming jasmine flower. That beautiful smile, less like a jasmine flower, and his face like a blue lotus, so much captured their heart that they were fully satisfied just seeing that. And they experienced a new kind of happiness. And then within them arose a unique desire which never they had experienced before. The desire to experience more. Because these are impersonalists always trying to be satisfied in what they have, not wanting more. But there arose a passion within them now. We want to have more of this darshan. So then they shifted their gaze from the face of the Lord to his feet. And they saw his beautiful nails. And these nails were so sparkling. And these nails were against, they were reflecting the reddish tinge of his lotus feet. The Lord is bluish in color, but his feet are reddish. So when the nails, they saw the nails which are reflecting the reddish tinge of the soles of his feet, it looked just like beautiful rubies. So there they were having darshan of the lotus face, blue lotus face, the jasmine blooming smile of the Lord, and they were seeing the beautifully sparkling rubies of his nails. They were finished. They forgot impersonal meditation forever. And Shukdev Goswami says, thus viewing the beautiful transcendental body of the Lord again and again and again and drinking in this nectar with their eyes, they finally achieved meditation on the Lord's personal feature. Never to give it up. They gave up the meditation, transcendental meditation on his impersonal aspect as a person gives us dry chapati in favor of sweet rice with saffron and whatever else you can imagine. I leave it to you. Otherwise, I will not be able to continue. There will be too much water in my mouth. They just gave it up. This is what Srila Prabhupada is saying, what Krishna is saying. Meditation on my personal feature is the highest, and those devotees are the highest. And Srila Prabhupada says, those who concentrate their meditation upon his personal form, the Lord's personal form. This is the first thing that is important, which point has been mentioned. Meditation on the Lord's personal form is the topmost. The second point that Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport is, worships him with faith and devotion. They are the topmost. So they worship the personal form. This is the process. There is some activity happening here. There is another, in this case also, there was passive activity on the part of the Kumaras. Initially they took in the fragrance. That was passive activity. And there was some active activity when they started observing the Lord's features. There's another incidence in the Srimad Bhagavatam of another personality who was also an impersonalist in the beginning, a jnani. Not the impersonalist where they deride the Lord, but just that they are very happy being concentrating on the Lord's impersonal feature, free from the three modes. They understand the Supreme Lord is there. They have heard of the Supreme Lord. But they are just so happy, free from all the tribulations of goodness, passion and ignorance. The Tritap. This is Sukadev Maharaj himself. And this, his story is repeated in some of the Bhagavat Mahatmyas. Shukdev Goswami is the son of Vyasadev. He actually made a historical record which somehow or the other the Guinness Books of World Records has missed. Unfortunately, they have no means to contact Shukdev Maharaj. So, what can be done? He stayed within the womb of his mother for 16 years. Why did he stay within the womb of his mother? Because he was afraid to come out of the womb. Why? Because as soon as I come out of the womb, my mother will say, Beta, my son. My father will say, my son. And as soon as my son, my and your starts, I and mine starts, immediately I will be caught in the tabernacle of material illusion. Aham Ameti. The entire world is in the tabernacle. It is caught in the web of Aham Ameti. I and mine. So Shukdev Maharaj is fearful. I don't want to come out because as soon as I come out, this is going to happen. So he wouldn't come out of his womb. Of his mother's womb, sorry. He wouldn't come out of his mother's womb. So the mother became anxious. She started approaching her husband, Vyasadev. Vyasadev, he tried various means. Come out, my dear son. I'll repeat the Vedanta Sutra to you. I will chant the Brahma Samhita to you. I'll all the scriptures to you. But the son would not come out. Because he was fearful. As soon as he comes out, the attachment would begin. This womb is a very safe place. No attachment. So he was sitting inside the womb of his mother, meditating on the impersonal Brahman. And very happy. But Vyasadeva wanted his son to be born. So Vyasadeva approached Lord Krishna in Dwarka and said, please do something. So in short, Krishna came and assured the child in the womb, don't worry. You will never be caught up by the attachments or the allurements of this world. You'll always be free and safe from that. Then Lord Krishna immediately left. He did not stay there because he wanted to enact a particular pastime through his devotee, Shukadev Maharaj. So as soon as his son was born, this was another record. He wasn't born as a young child. By his mystical power, he was born as a 16-year-old boy. Immediately he was a 16-year-old boy. His age, that he stayed within the womb. Because he didn't want to take chance of even, you know, 1 second of growth. There could be attachment right there. You know, even if you stay for 1 second with the parents born as a small baby and then just start growing to 16 years of age, who knows, my son, my father could start. So he immediately, when he came out of the womb, he was already 16 years old and he started walking towards the forest. Generally, nowadays we go to the forest to find some sandal trees, you know, for smuggling. Previously, when people would go to the forest, it was for the purpose of meditation. People, generally forest was full of all wild animals. So only those who were brave enough to stay amongst them and within them be, you know, try to practice meditation. No one would disturb them. So they would go to the forest. So Shukdev Maharaj went into the forest. Father tried various means to stop him, but he wouldn't stop. So he went into the forest. Vyasadeva was very much concerned. So Vyasadeva went to Lord Krishna in Dwarka and said, this has happened. What to do? Lord Krishna assured him, don't worry. You just go back. Everything will be all right. And then within his heart, he inspired him. Narrate to your son the pastimes as you have dedicated in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Or you have explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Vyasadeva said, all right, but how do I do it? My son is non-contactable. He has no email address, no phone, no mobile, no post box. What to do? How to contact him? So he hit upon an idea. He called a few of his very, very stalwart disciples and he explained to them the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, go into the forest and day and night just go on narrating the pastimes, narrating the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he was hoping that somewhere or the other, by tukka, you know, by some chance, someone would meet Sukhdev and Sukhdev would hear. His son would hear. Well, his effort did pay off. One of his disciples, when he was narrating the activities, the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, he was in the vicinity where Sukhdev, the meditator, could hear. And he specially was chanting a beautiful verse about the beauty of Krishna, his personal feature. Barha Pidam Natavara Naravapu, like that. And it describes how Lord Krishna, Barha Pidam, he has a beautiful peacock feather in his hair. Natavara Naravapu, in a beautiful human form, dressed as the best of the dancers. And how is he dressed as the best of the dancers? He has in his ear a blue lotus-like flower known as the Karnikar flower. Karnika flower is very beautiful. In Vrindavan, they say, even now, some of the cowherd boys, they always wear one flower and they always wear it in the left ear. Sometimes they wear it in the right ear also. Depending on which ear they wear it, there is a particular signal being sent. Krishna had various ways to signal his friends, send messages to his friends. So this is a young, beautiful boy dressed as a beautiful dancer, walking with a blue Karnika flower in his ear. And he's wearing a dhoti and a upper cloth, an uttariya, which is just like striking gold, golden lightning. Kanika Kapisham. And with this particular dress and various ornaments that his mother has bedecked him with, A beautiful Vaijayanti mala, a garland of flowers hanging down to his knees, and filling the flute that is holding in his two hands with the nectar from his lips. He walks into the forest of Vrindavan and making it glorious and very enchanting because of the marks of the footprints that he impresses on the ground of those forest lands. Those forests become very enchanting because of those impressions, followed by his friends who are constantly chanting his kirti or his glories. Shukdev Maharaj had never heard of someone going into the forest in such a beautiful decorative way as being mentioned here. And especially attracted to this personality playing the flute. Immediately he came out of his meditation. Who is this beautiful person? I want to know him. But then he stopped. He said, in my entire career, which was not very long up till then, obviously, but he said, in my entire lifetime, I have never heard or seen of a person so beautiful as is being described. This is simply someone's mental imagination. So he said, I should better sit down and meditate. But then he could not remove the impression that verse had created within his mind. A beautiful boy with golden lightning-like dress, marking the ground with the impressions of his foot and making the forest glorious with a peacock feather in his head, in his hair, filling the flute with the nectar of his lips. Wow! He could not remove this thought from his mind. But then he thought, impossible. There can be no one so beautiful as this. And even if there is such a person, that person will be so proud of his beauty. I don't want to meet a person who is so proud. He could be so arrogant because he's so beautiful. Because everyone who is following him is singing his glories. I don't want to meet a person who is arrogant and proud. Because that will bring up such emotions within me. Better I sit down and meditate. And immediately after that, he heard the verse which describes that, oh, what fortune that she demoness, the sister of the duck demon, Bakasur, that demoness, Baki, or the female duck demoness, what fortune she achieved. She had come with her breast covered with the most powerful poison in the universe, with the only desire to make Krishna suck her poisoned breast and die. The boy was only 6 days old, and she had come with this desire. And the she witch, she took Krishna in her arms and she fed him her breast milk, which was mixed with that powerful poison. And what did Krishna do? He sucked out the poison and blessed her. Because she came to feed him milk, he blessed her. Oh mother, you have come to feed me milk like a mother. I give you liberation and I give you the position as good as my mother Yashoda in my own spiritual planet. Kamva dayalum sharanam vrajema. Where can I find a person more compassionate than this? And when will I be able to take the shelter of such a personality? Who is more compassionate or worthy of taking shelter than this young boy who gave liberation and the position of his own mother to the she demoness who had come to kill him? When Shukadev Maharaj heard this, he was meditating on the impersonal Brahman. He was not meditating on the impersonal Brahman. His meditation had been destroyed by the description of the Lord's personal feature. But what was stopping him was the idea that such a person cannot be compassionate. Such a person cannot be giving. So when he heard that how compassionate, how giving he is, How loving he is, how caring he is. He immediately ran back to his father. Tell me more about him. Tell me more about him. And he engaged in the process of hearing from his father the Srimad Bhagavatam and became perfect devotee just by the process of Shravanam. In fact, whenever we mention an example of someone who has perfected his life through the process of hearing, we give the example of Shukadev Maharaj, who was born a jnani, an impersonalist, and became a devotee and engaged in the process of worshipping Krishna through Shravan. So that is the second point that Srila Prabhupada mentions here. That one that concentrate upon the personal feature form of the Lord and worship him with faith and devotion. Just like now we are hearing from Srila Prabhupada with faith and devotion. So this is worship. This is archana also, or puja. Worshipping the Lord through the process of hearing, like Shukadev Maharaj did. And the third point that Srila Prabhupada mentions the purport is, which is also important, and the of who is the topmost, what are his qualities? A pure devotee is constantly engaged, does not stop, constantly engaged, always concentrating or meditating on the personal feature of the Lord and engaging in his worship with faith and devotion. There was once an incident of two yogis or two transcendentalists. They're walking. They decided to go on a pilgrimage. And one of them was more attracted to the impersonal, personalistic philosophy. He was a jnani. And the other was a bhakta or a devotee. One who believed and practiced the personal worship, the process of devotional service. They decided that, this was suggested by the jnani, that since we are going on a pilgrimage, a tirtha yatra, we'll practice sense control. We will not engage in unnecessary talk. And we will just keep focused on the task at hand, that is to reach the particular tirtha. Until the time we reach it, we will not eat, we will not sleep, we'll just go on and on. And it was like a sort of competition too. Who will be able to do this better? So the jnani was thinking, not eating, not sleeping, this is not a big task for me. Devotees, you know, they take prasad, so they always eat. Then after a lot of chanting, dancing, they become tired. Then they go to sleep. Get up for Mangalarti again the next day. So he was thinking that it may be a little difficult for a devotee. So he said, let us do this. So in his mind, he was thinking that in this way, this person will come to my path. The devotee just agreed. He said, all right. So they went, they continued eating, sleeping for days on. Now, previous years, it was not so easy to reach a tirtha holy place. They were quite a distance and you had to walk. So many days they walked without eating, without sleeping, without stopping, without talking unnecessarily. It was a tiring journey. Ultimately, at one point of time, hunger and thirst and tiredness overcame them, both of them. So finally the jnani said, all right, all right, all right. I can see that you are tired and you are thirsty. So let us find a village. We'll not stay there inside, otherwise so many people will come and talk unnecessary talk. We'll stay outside the village and there'll be a well somewhere there. We'll just drink water and be satisfied. And if some passerby comes and offers us some food, we'll take it. So they're sitting by the well and someone came by and they said, oh, Babajis are here. So he brought something to them, but both of them were keeping quiet. So he said, all right, Moni Babas. Not talking. So he just said, please give me your blessings and please take this offering. Left that there. So the jnani said, okay, some food has come. So Om Shanti Shanti. Now let us take it. The devotee said, today's Ekadashi. So fasting. Then he said, okay, fasting. So food was there, but they fasted. Water was there, down in the well. But they said, no, fasting from water too. So they were right next to the well. So the devotee said, since we are anyways fasting, why don't we go on? So the Gyani said, no, let us take, tomorrow we'll drink some water from here and go ahead. We should break fast on time. It is very important to break fast on Dwadashi day. So we should break fast on time. So they stayed that night there. The next morning, they went to break their fast by drinking water. They found the well very deep and the water very, very in the depths, very low, down below. And there was no bucket, there was no pulley, there was no rope. What to do? So the Gyani said, so now what? Devotee said, let us stay here since we want to drink water, So let us stay here for some time. And if the Supreme Lord wishes, then we'll get water. Otherwise, we'll just be happy with whatever situation we are in. Gyani said, all right, if you say so. So the entire day, again, they had to fast. They fasted. It was really, they were shriveling up because of thirst. Their throats were all parched. Their lips were all dried and cracked. Literally, there was smoke coming out of their bodies. Because there was so much heat due to so many days of fasting. Burning up. Night time came. The Gyani could not wait anymore. He said, by my mystical powers, I will enter the well and drink water. Can you do that? The devotee said, no need. Say, I know. You do not have any mystical powers. You are practically useless. We have lot of powers. Therefore, a Gyani is better than a Bhakta. He did not argue. So by his mystical powers, he became very small and light, went right into the well, drank as much water as he wanted, and came out. He said, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. The devotee just slept. They said, now we've drunk water, I'm feeling a little dizzy, so we'll take rest here. Tomorrow morning we'll start on our journey. The devotee just slept. The next morning they woke up and he said, are you really not going to drink anything? So, whatever Krishna desires. So they got up to leave. And then they found that the well was brimming with water up to the top. So the devotee just went, took a palmful of water, drank it and said, I may not have mystical powers, but I know someone who has. So this is what Prishila Prabhupada says when he says a devotee is constantly engaged. Whatever the situation may be, a devotee does not give up the process of dependence on Krishna. And the process of dependence on Krishna is by worshipping Him. Because we always worship Him, we are always dependent on Him. And the process of worship is through serving Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, once a very great scholar came to meet him. Actually, he was very learned, a Vedantist, a Pandit. In fact, after him they have named an institute in Varanasi. Because he got that whole, they dedicated that institute because the king of Varanasi donated to him to establish a Vishwavidyalaya there, a world university. So this Panditji came to visit Bhaktisiddhanta and he said, I have some queries on particular scriptural writings here and I've heard that you give profound explanations on esoteric writings. Can you explain this to me? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur noticed that this person, he has a nice attitude, but he needs to learn something more. So Saraswati Thakur said, I am very busy right now. Why don't you go and ask one of my disciples who is working in the DT room, who is serving in the DT room. So Panditji said, I've come to discuss with you. Saraswati Thakur said, you go and discuss with him. So Panditji knew that Bhaktisiddhanta is a very great personality and there must be a reason why he was quite humble. So there must be a reason why he's saying that. So he agreed to his proposal and went to meet his disciple working in the deity room. And he said, your Guru Maharaj sent me. So please, can you explain this passage to me? So the disciple read this and said, it will need some explanation, but right now I have to clean these vessels because the deities need to be served. Rajbhog offering. However, if you help me, assist me in cleaning up all these vessels, these katoris and these thalis and these chamach, the spoons and the vessels, the pots, then the work can be done faster. We'll have some time and then maybe I'll explain it to you. So he said, okay. He started cleaning. Panditji was cleaning the vessels. And after everything was cleaned, there's some time remaining. So the disciples said, all right, now let us discuss on this. He said, no need. It's all right. He got up and started leaving. So as he was leaving, Siddhant Saraswati Thakur noticed that he was leaving. So he said, Panditji, are you satisfied? Did my disciples properly answer, give an answer to your query? He said, actually, we did not discuss anything. But I have understood the answer to my doubt. Bhakti Siddhant said, oh, how did you do that? He said, by cleaning the vessels. As I was cleaning those vessels, it was as if my heart was being purified. And now I've understood that devotional service to Krishna is the topmost. And that is the essence of what I had come to ask you. So the process, as Krishna says here, the Supreme Personality of God had said, those who fix their minds on my personal form and are always engaged in worshipping me with great and transcendental faith are considered by me to be the most perfect. This is Krishna's verdict. And it is true. It is the absolute truth. Devotional service unto the personal form of Krishna is the topmost, and one must make all efforts to keep oneself engaged in it constantly. Always. Avyartha kalatvam, without wasting any single moment of our human form of life. We'll stop here. Thank you very, very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki Granthara Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki. Now we'll have the darshan of Shri Radha Gopinath. And